ahead and move forward.
Thank
and
you.
Peggy, are you good to go?
We are recording.
Okay, thank you. I'd like to officially call the LCRDA Board of Governors special meeting to order. Introduction of guests. We don't have any. Modifications to the agenda. There was just the one, the addition of the minutes from the December 12th meeting. Would like to present that as an action item.
You have a copy of the minutes.
Yeah, you have the minutes in front of you, but it basically captures our conversation and meeting on December 12th. Once you've had a chance to peruse those, I'd entertain a motion.
So moved.
Is there a second?
Second.
Okay, it's been properly motioned and second. The approval of minutes from December 12th. All in favor, acknowledge with aye.
Aye.
Opposition? The motion carries. Public comment? There was none. We will move into Project Juggernaut, and we all recall. Yes.
As we move into public juggernaut, I need to discuss that I am not eligible to vote and must abstain to avoid any potential conflict of interest.
Thank you. Thank you very much, David. We'll take that into our minutes and note it accordingly. So the Project Juggernaut discussion, you all recall that from our December 12th meeting, you all had provided us with direction for staff to move forward with the understanding that our request would be we would have the long-term lease at no cost for a said period of time. However, we would be asking for dollars back in the way of $805,000, the value of the land for that period. The BIA meeting was held last night, and I, again, kudos for the support that was offered by our board members, both Commissioner Dozier as well as Mayor Daley. We did have an opportunity to put some comments on it, both Ron and myself, and I would say to you that we walked away with the approval of the $805,000. The reason why we're having conversation today, though, it points to the MOU. There will be an MOU in the action item, and you see it there. The action item calls for an MOU to be established between OEB and this board of governors, and it talks about how the allocation of dollars would be used. Now, you all are probably remembering that we didn't talk about in specificity here at this body. We said that it would align with our strategic plan. What is currently being proposed, and Ron, if you'll put that up there.
Well, I was going to show first what we did actually approve.
Because
I think there's been some confusion about that. So this was the item that we had presented to our board on the 12th of December.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what was approved. And it did include a couple of items. It included the pad-ready site development and for the remaining leasable parcels and Morgan Building renovation. But it also included sort of a catch-all other OEB-approved capital investment projects. The other thing is it had different payment terms, but those are the primary differences. Now, some of the rest of it, I think, is just going to be MOU-type language, but...
Do we have a big number for that site improvement, site-ready development? Is that pretty small or pretty large?
We do have numbers for that, and it is pretty large.
Which site?
The remaining available sites. So not the Project Juggernaut sites.
Okay, that's where I was thinking.
No, not Juggernaut. Mm-hmm.
Which is funny, which is what you had thought.
No.
I don't know how that translated, but... The whole idea is we have additional sites that need to get to the pad-ready status in order to market them quickly. So most companies, when they come in and want to look at, relocating, they don't want to take forever to get through,
permitting.
Design, permitting, all that stuff just to lay out the site. So there's stuff we can do to get it ready. We can look at what kinds of things will fit on there, how much is parking lot, how much is building. Do the geotech to make sure it's suitable land, all of those things, and as much of that as you can get done in advance, it makes it more marketable. So that's what this is about, and that's what OEV is trying to do as well. Is they're trying to identify other pad ready sites, not just in the park, but the more of that they have in their inventory, the more they have to market.
And obviously, they know what's being talked about. OEV does with regard to remaining leasable parcels.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
How many parcels really, in terms of scale, you have $805,000. They're obviously intending portions of that to be used to accomplish the work.
Probably let's move to the next slide, Ben, so that you'll see, because what they're directing and the action item that was approved last night is for goals 2 and 3, and I asked Ron to share with you the action item that was approved as well as revisit our strategic, our goals.
This item, the actual agenda item?
Yeah, the actual agenda item.
Yeah, this is what OEV approved last night. So the first two bullets have to do with the other incentives. The third bullet is us plus the sub-bullets. So they're saying, yes, we're going to give you $805,000, and we're going to allow you to spend that money on these items from our strategic plan, which is right now we have 15. After Project Juggernaut, we will have approximately 15 acres of undeveloped land. And then we also talk about renovation of the 23,000 square feet of existing space and buildings. We have 13,000 in the Morgan building. We have 10,000 in this building. And then they added something that we did not have in ours, which was the funding of the targeted recruitment of 5 new qualified leads, and they included funding for marketing, promotion, and travel. So that's also in our strategic plan. But the board did not approve that. The other thing they did is they changed the timing of the funding, which actually is probably better.
Yes.
So rather than being paid over 5 years, it would be in two amounts equally. The first half upon groundbreaking or October 2020, whichever is later. So if things get drug out, you know, it could get paid later. But we actually said that it was going to be upon execution of the lease, so it's all going to, it'll be closed. And then the other is once they occupy, or October 2021, whichever's later.
So and if you'll bring up our goals, just to let everybody else say those. So the conversation back and forth is that here is what we voted on December 12th. This is what got presented and approved last night. Not far off. I think that it speaks to, and I think we're in the right space, because it speaks to goals 2 and 3. Goal 1, you all may recall that OEV had already committed $2.5 million to us. So they've already put their commitment behind that one. Goals 4 and 5, because we have 5. Goals 4 and 5 were internal partnership development goal with governance, so it really, there was no dollars to even, there wasn't a need to support that. I did ask in my conversation last night with Christina after the meeting, because it was brought up, Commissioner Dozier did a fine job in representing us there, that we would like the flexibility, as Ron had pointed out, that if our priorities shift, because we're going to be going through, you know, reviewing our strategic plan, that we want the ability to be able to come back and say, hey, we'd like to shift the dollars here and have that be okay. She said that, yes, they wanted to fall in alignment with what Ben had committed to, and that was the case, and that I told her that we would then look to incorporate that language in any MOU so that there would be no confusion as we go forward, right, that if we pivot, that, yes, there was a way to do that without issue. So literally that's where we are, and the thought would be,
might be easier to see these. Sure. You have printout in front, yeah, of you, but mm-hmm, front and back.
So maybe silly question, but mm-hmm, under the agenda item, disbursement of funds, the timing, that applies to the money, not just to the applicant, but to us. Is that correct? That is exclusively.
That's to
this
us.
This is exclusively us.
That's okay. Us, yes.
But it's based on what they do, what the applicant does, in terms, yeah, of occupying and breaking ground.
Okay.
But it was actually better than what we had originally, yeah, requested. So,
well, and this has an October 2020. That's the
or the groundbreaking, whichever is later.
Or the ground. Oh yeah.
Whichever is later. So if the groundbreaking is drug out, then theoretically,
we are too.
We're on hold.
And
Commissioner,
yeah, I read that as it could be up to 5 years. It could. I doubt it would be that long, but a groundbreaking and a CO, I mean, there's a lot of space between those two. So I think we have to own that. But if Juggernaut did not move forward, the QTI, none of these things were happening. So I kind of understand the reasoning,
yeah,
from OEV for this, that it's kind of in line with QTI and others. There are benchmarks the company has to meet in order for dispersal of money. Madam Chair, if I can say one other thing about that. So Ron and Kim and Dave did a great job.
He was as an individual. Yes.
Yeah, Dave jumped up at the end and submitted another card. So thank you for that. I kind of circled back in the comments to pick up on this question of flexibility in the MOU going forward, and there wasn't much traction on that. But I will say we got kind of bogged down. There was some, Commissioner Proctor, others kind of really questioning this type of investment, this mm-hmm. type of company, and it was appropriate just to move forward. So mm-hmm. I'm glad you had that conversation with Christina afterwards. Something I think I shared with Ron was that I wondered if the vote today could memorialize our desire to have that flexibility in the Absolutely. MOU and direct Ron to go back and talk about that in negotiation. I would also think that we would want to add to that motion, I don't know if this is, we didn't talk about this, but that the MOU comes back to us for approval, kind of having that public step in the discussion. I think that would give us some confidence that the goals are aligning and some flexibility, you know. But I also said at the table that all of our goals align with OEB's goals. We're, as you said, Kim, we're not that far apart. Mm-hmm. So this is a lot better than one letter we saw in the negotiation. And to your question, Eric, I mean, I think there were some numbers in that. In one draft of the letter, this was the special meeting that the mayor had asked for, that Kim and John and I were here last week just talking about the proposal. And the three of us actually leaned in pretty hard, and that letter was changed. I also wouldn't mind saying that in my briefing with Blueprint, I was in with conversation with Vince, I was very clear that that was the board members driving that decision. Ron had negotiated in good faith with Christina, but we have two independent boards, and you can't assume that negotiation on staff level is going to result in a you know, no changes by your board members. So I think we're in a good place right now, but I just wanted to share those thoughts with you, but also say that I feel pretty strongly the vote of this board should include that flexibility going forward and bringing it back to us.
Absolutely. You agree? Yeah. Totally on board. Yeah. Melissa?
Madam Chair, I'm sorry, I don't usually interject myself in the discussions, but I know we have a timeline, so I'm going to ask now rather than wait and ask Ron later and create an issue.
Yes.
Do you is there a drop dead date that you want to insert? My only concern would be if the developer fails to break ground or fails to get their CO or one of the other triggers. Of course, that would be bad for a variety of reasons,
right,
and we
right.
may not expect to receive the funds, but at some point, do you want the ability to you know, call it off or have some other way to back out of the deal so the land's not tied up indefinitely?
Well, that actually makes sense. What time frame would we want to consider then?
I think in the past, mm-hmm. we have, I think it's been 3 years is typically what we put in there, that they have 3 years to start construction.
Okay.
You know, when you look at the whole process they're going to be going through, does that seem reasonable?
I would think so.
But I think you're absolutely appropriate that we need to put some date in there, otherwise it's just open forever.
Well, it helps push them forward.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And you're recognized?
This is a procedural question. I'm still getting oriented here. Mm-hmm. We're going to have an MOU. Who gives that to us and who drafts it?
So OEB will draft it. We are weighing in, and Christina stated last night when I spoke to her after the meeting that they would not take any action until this board had met. So my intention is to circle back around. But, yes, we will vote on what we believe should be the direction of the MOU,
okay.
any parameters around it, whether we want it to come back. Yes, we do want it to come back.
Okay.
Yes, we're
Got
giving Ron the ability to incorporate that language that talks about flexibility, all of that.
So we give that to them. They draft. The draft comes back
to us for vote. Each independent
body. Time frame, we've got to have a time frame on how fast that process is supposed to be.
Well, I suspect that they'll want to move that fast because that's the package.
Yeah. Well, yes and no. This MOU, if we approve the structure today, mm-hmm. this releases the package to go to Juggernaut so mm-hmm. they can move forward with their competition.
Correct.
So the MOU has no bearing on Juggernaut. That's something that we work out with LCRA. So it's not the same time. I just wanted to clarify.
That's
it's not
true.
The same timeline as Juggernaut,
mm-hmm.
Which is good. They, you know, with our action day, they'll be moving forward. I could look up the dates, but I know we have strategic planning in March. I think we have our next blueprint meeting in March. Is that right, John?
Yeah.
So that would, you know, I would assume that they want to move rather quickly with this. The only other thing, the 3 years, I think that's a good question, Melissa. I think it's maybe posture it as 3 years or discussing with OEB if they have a ceiling. If they have a, you know, due by date.
To be flexible with them.
It may be good to align that, but mm-hmm. I think having some must start construction by date, you know, is a good thing.
So if there is anything that is absolutely critical.
I didn't interrupt you.
No, you didn't. We kind of need to put a marker down today, is what I'm hearing. Because
it's not necessarily a marker. The marker would be determined by conversation. We want a marker, we just don't know what that date would be.
Yeah, I don't mean as to the date. I'm talking about
In general.
Yes. Anything that we think is really critical.
Oh, absolutely.
Needs to go back today.
Correct.
In some fashion. Because once they get the yes, they're going to go forward, and our MOU
right.
is going to sit back here and wait. The language is going to wait. There's going to be back and forth.
We'll have the opportunity to go back and forth, but yes, they will proceed with the judgment.
Okay.
Okay, and Eric, and then I definitely want to have Mayor, if he wants to offer any comments.
Okay, so I just wanted to get a general baseline understanding of this. Mm-hmm. Last month, when we talked about this, one of the major concerns of use of proceeds of funds was for renovations and things like that in LCRDA's existing buildings to make sure that there was at least a little bit of revenue stream or some source of funds to cover at least a portion of that. Based upon that, concerning the restrictions and limitations that are here, Ron, do you foresee any challenges, does this create any heartburn for you relative to what you know in the next 2 to 3 to 5 years likely would come up where you might otherwise prefer to use these funds? And I completely agree having flexibility in an MOU to backstop that is critical. But today, do you see any problem with this?
No, based on today, those are things that I absolutely need to get done. Absolutely. And I can't think of anything necessarily that's higher priority at this point.
Rating ourselves in for the next juggernaut.
I think this positions us exactly where we want to go. It does sort of light a fire to make sure that we get these pad-ready sites,
mm-hmm.
and I think that's a good thing. Thank you all for the work that you've done, for those who've been negotiating and working mm-hmm. through that, Mayor and the whole team. Mm-hmm. We very much appreciate it.
We did go to Moore Bass to ask them for an estimate on what it would cost to do some of this
right.
preliminary work. That's where the cost numbers came from. I'm not convinced that these are good numbers because,
okay.
as we've heard in other circumstances, that it's kind of a menu of things that you can do,
mm-hmm.
and it's how pad ready do you want to be?
Correct.
So obviously, the more pad ready, the more expensive. So. I think we came up with in the neighborhood of $400,000 for the land planning and getting all the way to pad ready, and which would leave another it's $400,000 to $600,000,
yeah.
let's say. So you're going to have somewhere in $400,000 to $200,000 left to do the other stuff.
Okay.
Does that include geotech? Because there's a lot of Swiss cheese out here.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
yeah. As we've seen. In the last couple weeks,
absolutely.
A week here with the mobile home.
Yes.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
So again, it just depends on, you know, they do preliminary investigation, what do they find? And but Moore Bass did acknowledge that they had some experience out here and that in their pricing they sort of put that in there that they expected
comments?
To find.
I'm sorry, Ron.
That's all right.
Last night OEB commented on that there were 5 active projects. Do we have any knowledge whether any of those might be candidates for the park?
Actually, I don't think they said active projects. They what they were talking about is funding to support the targeted recruitment of 5 new qualified.
No, he's talking about
Dave's mentioning the the OEB report out. It was
okay.
early, and it was 2 site visits and 11 maybe active projects or something like that. I don't know if you've been contacted about any of those.
No,
that's
no,
what he's
I'm not
saying.
Yeah.
Yeah, they don't connect the dots for me in terms of what they're calling 5 and and
11 or whatever.
Because we're having conversations with other folks, but I'm not sure what's in their list.
Yeah.
Because it could be stuff outside of Innovation Park.
Okay, I was hoping you'd say, well, yeah, we got three more.
I don't think we have anything that's an active.
They're not that close yet. I sit on that one too. So.
Okay.
I will say that they have hired a new business development person, and so hopefully that activity will pick up.
So then what's the expectation for this FCRDA's part for this funding and support for 5 qualified leads? We have to go manufacture these leads, or?
No, this is working with OEV. This is in cooperation with OEV.
We'll be done that anyway, right?
Yeah, that just memorialized on me, so it makes it an easy peasy.
But the part that the funds will be helpful for is actually the marketing piece. So
which we didn't have.
They don't have anything specified in their budget to help us market that I'm aware of. So, yes, if we can do more marketing, I can get my new person on board and get them involved in that process, absolutely we could spend the money.
Okay. One qualification, nothing specified to help, but their recruitment efforts are heavily focused on MAG Task Force and that work.
Correct.
So we've been tied into that, and Michael's still on the task force?
Yes.
Is that right? There's a strong tie there. So, yes, it was the example I used at the board meeting yesterday to say, you know, do we have too many specifics in here? I was drawing off of Ron's comments. But I don't think the 5 leads is that stringent. It wasn't.
No.
It's not like the dollar amounts we saw in the first quarter or anything like that. I mean, this is in line with where our plan is.
We also don't have a particular time frame here, you know, in terms of when the money starts rolling in, and you know, it's
like I said, all in all, I mean, I think the only thing we talk about the flexibility that we want, and just memorialize an MOU to make sure that it comes back. So, other comments? Otherwise, we'll entertain a motion, and I think that Commissioner Dozier was starting off with. Okay.
Well, there was a bunch of briefs. Mm-hmm. I think confidentiality was briefed a couple of times last night, and that was a little disappointing. But.
There was one board member who I don't mind saying it. It sounded like one person had mentioned. This is. I don't think it was breached, but it was very confusing. Many of us thought it was, but it was confusing. So, it's a challenging one when the item says, you know, the expansion of a local business. So, but there was a lot of conversation about the statute. Council for Blueprint leaned into that because some others were saying, why don't we have this information? But it. This is how we recruit businesses. This is the way it goes.
The mayor, he enlightened those that are hard.
Madam Chair, I want to publicly acknowledge John's opening comments when it came time to discussion, and his vociferous, laid it on the line about how this project needs to go forward, and then Kristen jumped in right behind him and supported that 100%. Our two board members who were on that were really, really working for us last night. And I thank you both. And then I got to thank Kim and Ron, too, for their excellent presentations. I thought we all collectively, this organization, represented itself very well last night. I applaud all of you who participated.
Thank you.
You got some good online press as well.
Yes.
Got her signed picture.
Exactly, I saw it. So help me with this a bit, but I suppose the motion would be to approve the action from Blueprint, move forward with the MOU with our desire to have some flexibility in the MOU to adjust the specifics, should our strategic plan adjust. To have a ceiling,
a drop dead date.
Thank you. I was thinking about the phrase, a drop dead date to be 3 years, or in line with a drop dead date should OEV have one as well. Would that be appropriate? I'm just saying, if they have a 2 year ceiling or a 4 year ceiling, just you may not need to get that specific. But
my only concern with. Actually, with any of that first payment option is that we're going to be sitting here with these things on our strategic plan to do, and potentially, if the company doesn't move very quickly, we're not going to have any money to do these things, and do we just, you know, sit on our hands until that happens because we have this other funding designated for it?
Right, we're going to have to be expending money in order to achieve the goal.
Right.
But we don't really know if the company will be able to move as quickly or in line with that.
So, and so our land is sitting there on a lease, and we have nothing.
Well, the market's been up, so.
But what would be the cure for that? Do you have a
You know, this first payment option might need to be sooner.
Okay, so I have some concern. Like I said, I mean, groundbreaking and CO are dependent on a lot of different factors with construction. I mean, the first one, October 2021, or ground, or is it 2020. Or groundbreaking. I would be astonished if they got permits by October. I think that that, I mean, there's not going to be an October 2020.
So that date is irrelevant.
That's just my general sense, that if they're in competition and then they have to go through the design and permitting and other things, it's going to be beyond October, even in the fastest. So I don't know if they would be amenable to permit applications or something else like that. I mean, if OEB is looking for some specifics in that to signal that the company is truly moving forward, there may be other things that we could say versus groundbreaking. John, do you have a sense? Have you talked to the manager about this at all? Do you have a sense? Because the cabinet, who is the manager, county administrator, and Steve Evans, the chair of the EDCC, they're the ones that really leaned in pretty hard, my understanding, on the MOU. So they do want this language, some language in there.
Well, at the same time, I've been getting very strong signals from Christina and Ben that they want us to be able to move quickly. Because when we said 5 years, they said, no, that's too long. We want you to have the money quicker so that you can get this other stuff done, because it's going to benefit them as well.
Can you have something a la an earnest money that would kick in upon issuance of permits or application? Permits?
I think that's what we're talking, that maybe we request that.
And maybe it's a dollar amount, a couple hundred thousand dollars, something that is meaningful, that would get you started, that sort of thing.
Seems like the board desires to move this forward, and we should leave it to staff to work out the details and bring us back an MOU that is in alignment with OEB's goals and our goals, and include some sort of time frame, some triggers that will allow us to move forward. And, you know, with the guidance of our team, I think they should be able to do that.
Okay, so then do we want to then have Kristen complete the motion then? Because the only other part that was missing was it coming back to this body.
So, and Ann, you're about to...
Go ahead. Yeah.
So, the ability to adjust... dependent on our strategic plan during the life of the MOU, coming back to the board, the ability for Ron to negotiate on the first dispersal of money to look for a trigger that is before groundbreaking, whether it be permits or some other. So just leave that kind of open, that we would like to see a trigger, understanding we need one, but something before groundbreaking, because that could be a substantial time.
Correct.
But something that signals the company is truly moving forward. But that just gives a general direction for you to have the conversation. Does that work?
Yes.
Okay. Was there any strategic plan come back to the board, first dispersal? Anything else?
And the drop dead date.
And the drop dead date. Thank you. I knew I was missing something.
Okay.
And the drop
dead date. Should you have to pull funds out earlier from our reserves?
I think we're still in that refusal period where your participation is not allowed.
If we were to pull funds out, would we have sufficient funds in order to do that?
Am I correct? I'm sorry, am I correct, Marcy?
From reserves?
I mean, I think... Yes.
It's typical for other boards, when you recuse yourself, you don't participate in the conversation.
Oh, I'm so sad.
You'll have to save it for the next item. Yeah. Yes.
Your previous comments were very general, though.
Yes.
Right, they were specific to the MOU, so I think that's why you didn't agree in.
Yeah.
Okay.
Sorry, Dave.
So, April.
So the question is, do we have enough in reserves that we could sort of advance the money?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, we have roughly $4 million in reserves.
That's a good point.
Yeah. In talking about the MOU, the thing that really jumps out at me with regard to this issue is that we are being asked to not take actions which we otherwise would take, and there's been no value placed on that in terms of what happens if this thing doesn't come to pass or takes a really long time. So in justifying it to whoever we need to talk to at OEV, I think that's the point that needs to be made, and I think it's a really valid point.
You know, absolutely.
Taking this whole thing off the market, if it never happens, isn't there something that we could have that's not completely dependent on the project itself? Does that make sense?
Something within the MOU?
Yep.
That is not, okay. Sorry, that's not dependent on the project itself.
Well, the entire approval that we're doing is to support Project Juggernaut.
Yeah.
So if we get earnest money or something like that in the MOU, well, we're talking about potentially expending it for stuff that does not necessarily support Project Juggernaut. And can we go forward with some of that, knowing that, you know, it's outside, but a possibility that Project Juggernaut could never happen.
So that comes to...
goes back to...
So I think there's two different things there. One, we're going to have to do some of this work anyhow. If Project Juggernaut didn't happen, or it wasn't on the table, we would be contemplating whether or not we were spending money to renovate buildings and other things. How, April, you framed it, advanced funding...
Yeah.
There are probably going to be some signals that Project Juggernaut is moving forward. If they are awarded the location, if they start the design work, we may have some confidence that the MOU is going to kick in at some point, and therefore we want to, quote, advance fund. I don't think that comes to the same, because we would either be making a choice of when to fund it ourselves if Juggernaut was not a thing, or advance fund knowing that we're going to get money sometime within the next year or something. Is that...
Now I'm confused. But all I'm saying is it's really like earnest money. We get it, period.
Yeah.
We get it, period.
OEB is not going to release it unless they see some benchmarks from...
Okay, that's what we
from
need
Juggernaut.
To know.
Yeah,
I don't think...
But at the same time, we're taking it... We're no longer marketing this real estate, and we're sort of in a holding pattern waiting for... all these things to line up and move forward. So, I mean, that is opportunity cost that we're losing.
That's the word I was looking for.
But we're not going to list this anyway. I mean, this is if we're not for Juggernaut, we would not be contemplating doing any of this property. Is that correct? In other words,
it's a challenging property to market.
To get a cash out of some kind to do some of these other things. Really, our only foreseeable option is through Juggernaut. Is that correct?
We
spending our own money.
Yeah. We didn't have. I mean, we did not have the land being actively marketed.
Okay. And there was no contemplation of doing so either, was there?
Only to the extent OEV was out marketing the park
through this type of connection.
Yes.
So valid comments, and we have the original motion. Is there a second to that motion?
Second.
Okay, so it's been properly motioned and second. All those in favor, please acknowledge with the sign aye.
Aye.
Aye. Okay.
One abstention.
Yeah.
Thank you, Dave. Okay, very, very good. Very
one question, though.
Yes, sir.
Mm-hmm. Now that we've voted. The 15 acres, that includes the footprint for the mini bit, right?
Yes.
So that's going to be funded separately anyway if it happens, so.
Yeah, which is what they were saying with the 2.5 that they're investing in that.
It's about 4.5, I think. Now, what it doesn't include also is the 18 acres that we have over off of Eisenhower.
Mm-hmm.
which theoretically, you know, if we wanted to try to market that, we'd get it ready, but I'm not sure if the rest of the area is ready for it yet.
Yeah, there are a couple, just on that one, there's a couple interesting conversations last fall that I thought, you know, may create some opportunities on that property. I don't know if it's time to look at that or not, but we've got enough inside the park to focus on pad ready as well.
And that could be part of the land planning piece that we look at is when we engage the land planners to look at the whole thing. And then there's also another element to this that we haven't talked about, which is the land that the universities control. And is it time when we start doing all this land planning to figure out exactly what kind of relationships we can have with the universities in terms of trying to market some of that land to private companies and what kind of relationship we need to establish up front. So it's hard to really put the number of acres, you know, as just what we have. I think we have options on how we look at it.
Okay, we'll make sure we...
Is that relationship not already defined?
Well...
Not in terms of how we might market their properties.
If I had a conversation with President Robinson about this a few months ago, just very general. So if you remember, most of the property we moved into FSU's master plan, therefore they controlled, it's already built out. There's a few acreage that isn't. Most of FAMU's land is not built up. So my understanding from the president, from others, and Keith, I don't know if you have any other information on this, but it was their focus on master planning for the primary campus. They haven't really looked at Innovation Park property necessarily, but my conversation was to say there may come a time very soon where if a family was willing to lease some property to a private company that we were helping to recruit or, you know, with OEB, that I just wondered if they would be open to that. And he indicated that he was open to the conversation, but no, we have enough of our own property, and that we were really waiting to see if FAMU had some direction on that. But yes, I think the conversation, that's why I opened the conversation with him, because I think it is timely, and it may come to some benefit for FAMU. To get into a lease arrangement with one of those properties or something else. So
I'd had a previous conversation with Tim Moore before he left, and Tim was very open to the concept.
Yeah.
But we have to get past concept into, just like with all of the creating pad ready sites, we have to have an agreement as to how we're going to do that so that when we have a prospect, it isn't let's go to FAMU now and figure out how we're going to do this. We got to get that part.
So why let's put that on our radar that we have that conversation with the university.
Okay. So let me make sure. I don't know if I completely understand this. Let me put it on third grade level. So we got basically three landowners out here, right? You got FAMU, you got Florida State, and you got Innovation Park, LCRDA. Mm-hmm. We're all marketing our land differently, and there's no joint agreements between the three.
They're not marketing their land.
Yeah, FSU's got theirs committed.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's relatively a major site is contemplated for a new building right at the entrance. There's some other sites just across the street, basically from the Mag Lab. There's three lots. Those are actually questionable value in terms of what can be built there because they're geotech. Mm-hmm. Relatively little else, I believe.
To bring this back, I mean, many of you were not here when we did the restructuring, so just if this helps, John, the restructuring plan, all the land is owned by the state. So the suggestion, and we took this to the Internal Improvement Trust Fund Board, right, the cabinet, moving the property into FSU's master lease was a way to alleviate debt and control of some buildings that, like Schlager, that FSU was owning, operating, and just kind of clearing up a lot of the, frankly, way we had constructed buildings and were managing them that wasn't working for us. It was a drain on the budget. So it was primarily, I will say, focused on restructuring the organization. because we have partnerships with both FAMU and FSU, it was a fair split between the property for FAMU and FSU, and it just happened that FSU had more buildings, and that's really where that debt alleviating all those issues came from. So it was making FAMU whole as part of this partnership. But within that, we still have a few steps, you know, that Ron talked about before on the covenants restrictions and things like that, and that all contemplated in Gary Ostrander, and actually Dr. Robinson or President Robinson was doing the negotiation on behalf of FAMU, and at a time when he wasn't interim, or maybe he was interim, or something. He was interim at that time. So he was steeped in that discussion. So the idea was that the park would still have a, we would still have a partnership in structuring the property and moving forward. We were all sitting on the board together, everything like that, but we didn't talk about marketing at that point. Does that help? So we haven't seen much movement and needed to have this conversation, I guess, from my perspective, until.
So Florida State's got property. It sounds like y'all are going to build at the entrance, and then you got three lots of questionable value, but maybe some idea of what the university wants to do with it. Mm-hmm. Sounds like FAMU's got some undeveloped land. Mm-hmm. I need to educate myself more. What is FAMU's plan for the undeveloped land, or is there a plan?
There is not a plan at this point.
But technically speaking, there could be three different models of a lease agreement: for State's idea, FAMU's idea, and our idea.
There could be.
Might not be a bad idea for us all to get on the same page so that there's one type of lease agreement. Look, I'm just thinking about if I owned a company, I was looking for land, and I come in, I'm going to want to turn dirt immediately, right, as soon as I possibly can. And if one of the barriers is simply just trying to figure out potentially three different lease agreements, and it's not, that could be a huge hurdle.
That's exactly the point, in that right now the other two, the universities, are not attempting to lease their property. They haven't decided to do that. And so what we're saying is we need to get with them and say, do you want to? If we had a prospect, what would that arrangement look like?
I understand.
So we need to initiate. We need to.
Surprised that we haven't done that already. I thought that that had already been established.
This is what I teed up with the president. This has not been something that FAMU could or wanted to move forward with. They've been doing a tremendous amount in recent years.
Right.
But we didn't have people knocking on our door for our 15 plus acres.
And honestly, it's more than, until Juggernaut, it was a lot more. We had plenty of ground before Juggernaut. Now we're at the point where it matters. I'm sorry for real.
No, that's right. We had a lot more. And to lease our property first and the contiguous nature of our property, that's direct benefit for LCRDA. So that's really what we've been focused on is that property and giving FAMU some time to work through this. But yes, now is the time that if we start to see more traction laying the groundwork for the future, to know if we have a lead that, say, wants to take FAMU or is interested in FAMU property closer to Orange Avenue, down Paul Dirac, they would rather have that location than one of ours. Is FAMU interested in that conversation or not?
Mm-hmm.
They could access PICO dollars, and you can't build classroom buildings out here, but like the Interdisciplinary Research Building, there are other options, but FSU is tighter on property and has built out the property more. So I think FAMU hasn't gotten to that question, whether they would do another building like Centennial for their own use or want to lease to others. So this is the tipping point to have that conversation.
But John, the longer range thought process that I've advocated is that there will be a day when we have to have a second park, be it either research or be it either industrial, that this board would help put together and manage. I really believe that day will be hopefully sooner than later.
So my next question, and maybe this is not appropriate for this meeting, maybe this is for another meeting, but for State and FAMU, you have space available. I'm curious to know internally within the university, what is going on with tech transfer and startups? I mean, do we maintain a master list at the universities of, hey, we got this PhD student in chemistry that's, you know, pharmaceuticals that's doing incredible. He's got a great idea. She might want to launch a company in the next couple of years. We're not nurturing it. Do y'all keep like master lists internally? And if so, okay, do we have any potential startups out of the university tech transfers that we could play a very positive role in helping to nurture that maybe we haven't played that role before? If we don't have energy internally, like we're at a point where we don't have students or professors that are at that point, then what business research have we done to aggressively recruit in? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Like, what's the snapshot? What are we looking at?
For FAMU and for FSU and for TCC, I can speak better for FAMU, but yeah, we do have tech transfer. They do inventory the research that's being done by students and professors. Annually, they would display it at the iShow, and where all three universities and LCRDA would participate as well. And they come out and they see if there's anything that is ready to go to market. So far, there have been a few from FAMU's perspective. There have been a few companies that have been launched successfully. But I can't speak for TCC and FSU. But
of course, we wouldn't. We don't have the tech
right,
transfer.
But I don't think that there's a lot of convergence between FSU's tech transfer and FAMU's tech transfer to the point where I think you would like to see it.
Yeah, I can tell you that relative to FSU, there is a rather substantial commercialization office. They got a fairly large staff. We run 50-ish patents issued per year. There is a grant mechanism in place to fund some initial startup money for companies who have a good idea to get it to the point of kind of a go, no-go decision for someone else for licensing. Primarily, I would say, due to the lack of physical space to plant companies, most of their activity has been in terms of efforts to license to existing companies. There have been some exceptions, and really it kind of underlines the point why an incubator is needed, because these people have chased off to Alachua and other places in order to find space. So as time goes, when you look back historically the last 5 years, there have been companies who actually occupied space in the park, mm-hmm. startups, a couple of them. Now, of course, as with any startup, they don't necessarily have a long-term future, but for a variety of reasons. But there is some capacity there. There's some potential as time goes.
If I can add to that, the tech transfer officers and Office of Commercialization for both universities serve on the advisory board for the North Florida Innovation Labs. That's the whole point, is that that's what we're trying to bring into here, and they're the connection to the university. So, yeah, we're working on that. At the same time, in terms of our marketing efforts, Michael and I have started to work on how we can reach out to the universities. The professors are not a great market. Frankly, our opinion is the universities don't want the professors to commercialize technology themselves. I think it's probably okay for them to be chief technology officers, but they don't want them running businesses. And is that a fair statement?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That's not what they get paid to do. So, but we have seen some examples of grad students who take over something that they were researching with a professor. Jason Robotham, for example. Eric Graven is probably not a good example, but New Energy, they came out of CAPS here in the park. So, We're trying to figure out that marketing strategy, and again, I think I mentioned before you got here that we did just hire a new marketing person who starts in a couple of weeks, and that's what we're going to be focused on. I've already told her that's the priority, is to get out there and find where's the audience that we're trying to attract here, and let's develop a strategy to go after them. So we are working on that.
So Commissioner Dozier, and then I'm going to have us jump into our next item.
And actually, I was going to say, I love this conversation, mm-hmm. and I think this could be a very good place to start in a strategic plan conversation, right, or kind of visioning for the next few years. I only wanted to add that in creating the capacity to, or the opportunities for this pipeline, we did need to start with the incubators. That's why we did the study several years ago. We've got this started, the grant, all of that. What really successful research parks that did the restructuring in the 80s, some of you have heard me say this before, but I'll just repeat it again. The restructuring that we're doing right now, really, in the last few years, they would build a spec building, attract one company, and create space for companies that are moving out of their incubator to start to grow. And that started to create a critical mass where they were recruiting more companies that wanted to be aligned and near those others, but also a space for a growing company to move into, to move from their incubator into that spec building. So that's something we've not contemplated yet, but that does come up for kind of a next step in this process. But we got to get the incubating capacity because they can't do those next steps within the university structure. They've got to have someplace else to go. So that was just, I don't know if that helps you, but that was kind of the pipeline, and it takes years, but we're poised, making more progress now, more rapidly than we ever have on these issues. So
does that help kind of? Add that to the planning meeting. So, Ron, if you'll transition us into the second item.
Well, actually, that's a good segue because we're talking about incubation. Yeah. So, we received a letter from EDA last Wednesday. Mike Mullen and I had a conference call with them as well. And they have given us a further consideration letter, which basically is a good step. It means basically we've looked at it, we like it, but we have some questions. Mm-hmm. Answer these questions, and if we still have money and you've answered the questions adequately, it sounds like there's a very, very, very good chance we'll get the award. Is that a fair statement, Eric? I know you've had experience with that. So we have 16 questions to answer. One of those is a resolution, which basically authorizes me to submit the application that I already submitted, and then to accept any award that we receive. And it's just this is just a resolution.
Just a formality, easiest thing we'll do all day. So with that said,
I move. Okay. I can talk now.
You're out of your box. Yes, you can. Is there a second?
Second.
Okay, so it's been properly motioned and approved or seconded the EDA grant application, the resolution. All those in favor, please acknowledge with a sign.
Aye.
Aye.
Opposition? Motion carries.
If I could add.
Yes.
So in the 16 questions, a lot of it's fairly easy. Mm-hmm. For example, in the paper these last 3 days, you'll see a public notice that we were required to put out there, and we did. And I'm not going to go through all these, but the biggest, we have a big challenge right now, and it has to do with FSU's pledge letter. And I'm working with Gary Ostrander on the specifics of how we can address this question, but the EDA had an issue with the number of conditions in the pledge letter. They were fine with OEV's pledge letter, which had some, you know, minor stuff, like we got to execute an agreement or something, but FSU's was a little more specific. So we've talked to their counsel. They've told us what the issues are. And unfortunately, since Gary Ostrander gave us the letter, the rules, I don't know if it's statute that changed, but now anything over $2 million, the universities have to put through their finance committee for the Board of Trustees, which could take time. So I had a call with Gary at 10:45 this morning to address that question, but I'm telling you, that's, I think, our biggest challenge. Melissa is working on a number of items, including a title search to make sure the land has never been taken by eminent domain, among other things. We have a couple lease issues that I think, I don't know if you've done the research.
I've done the research. I'm still trading calls with the gentleman at the EDA.
Okay.
Their phone system is apparently down, so he's on his cell phone and we're...
Okay.
Okay.
So that's, I think that's good. Those are the issues, the two issues that I'm most concerned about are the lease questions with the Board of Trustees of the Internal Improvement Trust Fund, potentially, and the match letter.
Is there an opportunity to call a special meeting? I mean, since I chair our university's finance and facilities and budget, so I mean,
and that's, I think the conversation we're going to have at 10:45 is to find out what our options are.
Okay.
And that was my question.
Okay. Commissioner,
what's the process? So we'll figure that out.
Yeah.
I had a meeting on Tuesday, unrelated to our grant or anything, with Greg Bidet from the EDA and two representatives from DC. They were actually in town doing a deep dive on opportunity zones. They're visiting, I think they've visited 17 states at this point, looking into opportunity zones, what's working, what's not. I did want to make a comment to you all about the opportunity zones. They referenced Innovation Park specifically. I'll save that for a second, but Greg did mention the letter and your conversation with Gary afterwards, and you and I have not talked about this week, but I got the sense from Greg that if there was an agreement with FSU that was outside of the commitment letter, that may be a way to work through this, meaning the commitment letter.
We discussed this option.
Did you?
Well,
okay.
Melissa and I did, but not Greg.
Okay.
I just raised the concern that, and I've seen this in other instances where with grant funding or any kind of federal funding, that there might have been a representation made by us in applying or in some of the other language of the application, that any agreement related to the particular proposal and grant funds has been captured in writing.
Yeah.
And that to have something that was, you know, a verbal agreement or some other document that is not presented to the EDA might be problematic. And I just said we need to check all of that language to make sure we've not made a representation along those lines.
I think that's an excellent point, and I don't think that Greg was saying at all that the letter would be out of step with any other details. It would need to be in line, but maybe not as detailed in the letter. I guess I got that impression, that the letter the EDA needs could be more general.
Okay, I understand. Yes.
But those are questions that I think you could definitely ask the lawyers with the EDA. I thought that was interesting opting out. Of course, Greg's not in the vetting process. He is our counsel, you know, our rep in Florida.
And he makes it clear that he doesn't get into the legal stuff.
Yes. So it was not any specific direction. It was just looking to explore options on that. So just wanted to offer that.
Okay, and then just the other thing on that, how it is time sensitive. It's February 18th, Ron, that we have to have all these questions answered and back. So.
Yeah, and preferably sooner because, as they always tell me, is the money can run out before we get all the
questions answered. Correct, so sooner versus later. So if you'll keep us apprised of the conversation with FSU and how that goes. But we have completed our action that's required of this body. Okay. Chair's report, just primarily be on the lookout, strategic planning, scheduling that. If there are topics of interest that you would like to put forward as we begin shaping the agenda, then please share that. Got yours, Mayor. And if there are others, then certainly please share that. And any new business?
Yes. The questions about Opportunity Zone, and this was Regional Planning Council meeting with some of the staff, so it's 9 counties. The Opportunity Zones were decided by the governor. If you remember, the communities could submit recommendations, but they were ultimately decided by the governor. There have been kind of two issues that I raised. One was capacity building, helping people understand what the zones are in economic development marketing. That was more Planning Council, but also Leon and Tallahassee. But the second piece is whether or not we've had the opportunity to redraw some of the opportunity zones. For our region, a lot of the ones in Wakulla County, others hit National Forest, for example, or something like that. Senator Rubio actually has a bill now, and there's a House companion, to redraw opportunity zones in areas that have a declared disaster. My impression from the EDA staff was that there will not be any movement from their perspective on redrawing opportunity zones, kind of open that can of worms entirely. But if Rubio got some traction, and I'm glad he has a house companion, to look at opportunity zones in our area, and we are under that disaster declaration. In looking at the map of Leon County, I was kind of orienting them, and it was actually, and Madam Chair, I wanted to share a comment with you. Joel, I'm forgetting his last name, but he came with the director of the EDA when they announced the TCC award, and at the dinner, and he said, it's just crazy that Innovation Park isn't in the Opportunity Zone. So I love the fact that he lifted the park up specifically. So I'm just wanted to share that with you all, that for any of our legislative dialogues, yes, for anything, I mean, with EDA, Opportunity Zones, for city, county, the higher ed, we need to be aware that if Rubio got traction on this bill, that we may be able to move the park into the Opportunity Zone, and the EDA has already kind of noted that. The last thing I will say is, and I was going to share this with you privately, I don't mind doing it now, that he said, I can't believe, the director of the EDA, Doctor, I'm forgetting his name right now,
I am,
that he highlights TCC in his speeches nationwide. Wow. That it's one of his favorite projects, that he loved visiting our community, we are definitely on his radar, and that they would love any updates you might provide, because, and I have to contact the two gentlemen I was with, right, or one of them writes the speeches for him.
Oh, wow.
And he said that he would include updates from TCC if he wanted to provide it. So I'll make that connection, but this is really good for us in any outreach to the EDA, but particularly Opportunity Zones.
Absolutely. So thank you, yeah.
Is that, yeah. Just something to know.
Very good, very good.
Thanks
all
for
fronts. No. Any other new business? Okay, then, motion to adjourn. Have a great weekend.